This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Matt Graham, good to have you here with us. Matt Graham is the founder and CEO of MBS Live with this week's market update, kind of what we have on the economic calendar. And as the stomach turns, Matt, good to have you here.
No kidding. All of 2022, really, right?
That's so true.
So last week, Les touched on this stuff going on with the Fed. Obviously, the big focus was the Fed meeting on Wednesday afternoon. And bonds approached that by consolidating at first, but not before moving up to the highest yields in quite a while on Monday morning. And the Fed reaction or the market reaction to the Fed was fairly interesting because not a whole lot happened right at 2 o'clock. The Fed did a really good job of delivering exactly what the market expected in terms of the rate hike and the balance sheet normalization plan. That has to do with not tapering, but the next phase of bond buying reductions. And they put caps above which, if reinvestments come in, they will continue to reinvest and continue preventing balance sheet runoff. So they said in the minutes early April that the cap would be $35 billion and it would be phased in over 3 months. That means that they have to receive more than $35 billion in proceeds on their bond portfolio, MBS portfolio, in order to reinvest anything back into the MBS market. And $35 billion basically means no reinvestments in the current environment, and it would mean that we'd just get a moderate amount of reinvestment when the market picks back up if rates fall. So they're setting it pretty high, and it's probably going to shut everything down in this environment, but it's high in order to avoid too much reinvestment going forward. And there we have it. No major surprise. They're going to start that on June 1st, and then they're going to take another 2 months. They'll get halfway there starting in June, and then they'll get the other halfway there in July. So the long end of the bond market took this a lot more poorly than the short end. This is one of the reasons that mortgages were able to outperform. And the other reason was that the Fed threw a little bit of a bone to the mortgage market and to the bond market in general by saying, yes, while we are going to be normalizing the balance sheet, there's a limit to how long we're going to do that. And once the level of reserves is consistent with what we think is necessary, then we're going to stop rolling off reinvestments from the balance sheet. And so actually having that bullet point in the normalization principles, which is a document that the Fed releases concomitantly with the announcement and with this news of balance sheet normalization, is something more than we had last time. So it's actually spelled out that this won't last forever. And I think that the mortgage market particularly was relieved to see that because the mortgage market relies more on the Fed's largesse than the Treasury market does. But beyond that, from a curve steepening standpoint, when shorter dated maturities are doing better than longer dated maturities, which was definitely the case after Powell's press conference, it's a little bit better for mortgages because they're assumed to be much shorter in duration than 10 years right now. For the simple fact that as soon as rates drop half a point, everybody that got a mortgage in the past few months is going to refinance, like automatically. Mm-hmm. All that to say that there was a varied reaction to the Fed depending on the security. Shorter dated securities did very well. That's because there was a specific comment in the press conference where Powell said they're not currently considering 75 bip hikes. And so that Fed rate hike outlook is going to have more of a bearing on shorter term debt, 2-year yields especially, but it also means that 5-year yields will do better than 10s and 10s will do better than 30s. And so since MBS are closer in duration to 5s, that's one of the reasons they outperformed. But in a general momentum sense for the bond market, what we were left with was a very brief, decent reaction on Wednesday afternoon and then more selling pressure in the rest of the week. Selling in stocks, selling in the long end of the yield curve. And that's something that analysts and traders scrambled to come up with justifications for. But I really think the yield curve tells the story, and it was just a factor of normalization being every bit as aggressive as they said it would be, and of the rate hike outlook being perhaps a little less onerous than some people foresaw. And so it was really all about curve trading at that point. And as far as the long end was concerned, everything fell within the trend that had been established long ago. Whether you want to look at that trend as starting in late 2020 or early March in a steeper sense, things have been going up, up, and away for yields. But thankfully, so far this morning, no major drama. In fact, we're coming back in the other direction. And some of that may have to do with Asian markets coming back online, specifically Tokyo, out on holiday virtually all week last week, now back in the office. I'm not saying that's why we're rallying, but there's more liquidity and more activity in the bond market in the overnight session so far this week. But domestic traders have been the best buyers so far today, and perhaps simply by way of getting back into the office, whereas Friday may have been a little bit of pre-weekend positioning. I wouldn't be surprised to see things get defensive at times in the next few days as traders gear up for the 3-10 30-year bond auctions. Also, core CPI, or just CPI with the core component being the most important on Wednesday morning. That's our big inflation reading, and the Fed definitely explicitly and implicitly said that they're data dependent right now. They have a really good idea of how much they're going to hike. They have a really good idea that they're going to stay the course on this normalization thing. And then they're going to keep an eye on inflation data specifically in order to determine whether they're going to tighten further or ease up a bit eventually. So these inflation reports are tremendously important, CPI probably chief among those. And that will be Wednesday morning, 10-year auction Wednesday afternoon, and a couple other inflation indications via producer prices on Thursday, and then inflation expectations via consumer sentiment on Friday, all worth watching, starting most importantly with CPI on Wednesday, hoping that that data will help us solidify a ceiling. But again, it depends on the data.
Data, so important, critical of what's out there. And lot to be taking into consideration this week. The number one thing you think we should be keeping our eyes on?
Yeah, the CPI release, 8:30 a.m. Wednesday morning. That's the biggest potential market mover for sure.
I'll make sure everyone heard that loud and clear. Jack, any thoughts on today's update from Matt?
Yeah, I've got a couple, David. First of all, I had to chuckle when Les said that Powell mentioned that don't worry, everything will be all right. Kind of reminded me of the last time we were in QT. And yep. Powell said, the program's on automatic pilot. And shortly thereafter, the S&P 500 tumbled almost 16% over 3 weeks in December of 2018, causing the Fed to blink. And then they abandoned rate hikes in January of 2019 and started phasing out of QT in March of 2019. So I just thought, that kind of reminds me of something similar that Powell said that didn't turn out to be that way. So really a question for Matt, as I try to wrap my brain around the length of QT, right? I mean, at least what I'm reading is that we're looking at a shrink of about $3 trillion. And at $95 billion a month, Matt, I mean, my math tells me QT right now is projected to be approximately 2.5 years?
It just depends on where they set the bar as far as where they want to level off. So they may well decide that the level of reserves they need is closer to $2 trillion by the time we're 1 year down the road, and then we might be pleasantly surprised by that when they mention that. But yeah, as long as the balance sheet is progressively shrinking by a decent clip, I don't think that they would mind if it took 2 years. Per se. I'm not sure there's a right or wrong time frame to accomplish that. All they know is that they need to be accomplishing it while they have the chance, and that they probably waited too long to start anyway. So here we are.
So to Matt's comment about Wednesday CPI, if the CPI prints at 6%, I think the markets will react favorably. Anything over 7%, I think that we could have a negative reaction to it. So Matt's spot on with the 8:30 print of CPI on Wednesday, followed by Thursday's print of PPI. So buckle up the seatbelts. The market right now seems to be wrapped around the axle. We've got a little hyper anxiety going on. So I think a lot of people anxiously await the CPI number on Wednesday.
We shall see. It's very astute that you made the comment you did. I'd love to get Matt's feedback on that. They say one thing and then they go, oops, markets didn't react so well. What's your thoughts? Remember those days, Matt?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to consider, because I think to some degree they have to speak confidently and assumptively, knowing full well that they'll have to walk things back in the future if the market forces their hand. But what I think is not necessarily as clear is the extent to which they care about stocks. And I hear this a lot. And I think they probably do care if it is filtering through to financial conditions. which is an oddly defined term for the Fed. I don't really pretend to understand what they mean by it, although they do have a little blurb on it if you Google it. But the stocks sort of play into that, and stocks also can play into a wealth effect that can affect economic growth as well. So at some level, they're concerned. But first and foremost, they're concerned about inflation, and I think that they can tolerate a drop in stocks, and they were definitely tolerating it in 2018, at least to some extent, because the top in stocks occurred in September 2018. And a lot of it was global growth concerns. And then those concerns started to filter through to yields in the bond market. And people were thinking, okay, it looks like this economic cycle is topping out and the Fed has kept rates too high for too long. So whether it was stocks or not, there was broad economic concern at a global level. And I think we'll see the same thing this time around if the economy does what some people expect it to do. Whether that's in response to Fed rate hikes and balance sheet normalization, tougher to say. I think the Fed policy moves grease the skids for what the economy would want to do anyway. And now that those skids are ungreased, making it harder to really turn the cogs of aggressive growth. So if we do have a slowing impulse in the economy, then this will add to that. But ultimately, the global economy is to slow down to a point that inflation is actually slowing down for the Fed to remove its normalization plan, to stop the normalization policy. So inflation first, but then growth, jobs, financial stability second.
Clearly inflation first, Matt.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, there's so many aspects about this. I mean, a market drop is one thing. The bottom falling out, it felt like in that particular season, what Jack was referring to, could bring about yet another different reaction. So a lot to be determined. Stay tuned. You got to have a service like what Matt provides. In fact, I don't think you need to have one like it. You need to have mbslive.net. Be sure to sign up. You can do so by going to mbslive.net and go to the sign up, and you'll be asked for a code. You can put in LOL, and you'll receive an extended trial period without a credit required. You're going to want to put in a credit card, because once you start looking at how good this service is, you'll definitely want to sign up. Matt, thanks so much for being here each and every week with some great information. Jack, thanks for your opining to it as well, both of you. We're going to be diving into some developments on the conversational AI. I'll explain why when we get into it, but hoping to do that, as things developing, I see the need to bring back to our listening audience some really interesting technology that's out there, specifically conversational AI. Talk to you more about it hopefully next week. Good to have you with us. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, Lenders One, Mobility MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, Mortgage Collaborative, SnapDoc, Success Kit, Lender Toolkit, Total Expert, Form Free, and Simple Nexus. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Have a great week and look forward to seeing you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.